We're joined this morning by Edgar Papke, who has written the book, The Elephant in the Boardroom, How Leaders Use and Manage Conflict to Reach Greater Levels of Success. Edgar, I guess the elephant must be conflict. Do I have that right?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Is it more about what, is it the conflict itself or what becomes of the conflict, of not dealing with it properly?
Yeah, it's actually both. What we find often in organizations is that there's conflicts and nobody's willing to talk about them. And as long as leaders aren't stepping into those and confronting those, then they continue to grow and very problematically.
So let's talk about what needs to be done. What does a good leader do with that conflict when it comes up?
The first thing is that you'll find is that what leaders are expected to do is three things. One is create change in the world around us and make our world better for us. That's what the phenomenon of leadership is really all about. The second thing that we expect leaders to do is to confront conflict and to be able to use that conflict to create the changes that people are seeking. And those two are very interdependent. So the first thing that leaders really need to do is understand that all innovation and great change and great ideas actually stem from conflict and in using it effectively in organizations and in communities. That's what really drives the change that we're all looking for.
I assume all conflict is not created equal. Is conflict either all good or is there bad conflict that you wanted to avoid somehow?
Yeah, that's all a matter of how we see it. And that's, I think, one of the more important pieces about what I find in working with leaders is that it really has to do a lot with how it is that they go about managing it that makes it either destructive or negative or makes it positive and constructive. So it begins with how it is that we view it and then what we do with it. I don't think there's anything that we should look at in terms of conflict that would lead us to want to completely avoid it, unless, of course, it's a life and death situation. We've got to go the other way.
How do you deal with people on the receiving end who may not deal well with conflict, who may not deal well with even constructive criticism?
That's a really great question. First and foremost, and I mentioned this in the book and go into it, is that we've got to get clear on what our intention is for the relationship and be able to bring that into the spoken realm. In other words, if I have a conflict with you and I'm afraid of how you're going to respond to it or that you're going to perceive it in a way that I might be attacking you, the best thing to do is actually put that up front in the conversation, which most of us actually don't do very well. In other words, if I want to have a good working relationship with you or I want to improve the relationship, that would be the first thing that I would suggest you bring into the, that I would bring into the conversation, would be to ask you to have a conversation with me and that my intention is a positive one and not one that I want you to feel ill at ease with or be fearful of. And very often what happens when we do speak to someone or we engage in a conflict, we immediately go to a place of defensiveness because we're worried about how the person might respond. So a good thing to do is actually talk about that up front and make that the front end of the conversation. It doesn't take a lot of time, and it helps us in kind of building a runway for the rest of the conversation.
We're talking this morning with Edgar Papke. The book is called The Elephant in the Boardroom, How Leaders Use and Manage Conflict to Reach Greater Levels of Success. Is this applicable in all sorts of leadership roles, whether it's in a business, maybe even in a family, sports?
Yeah, that's a really good question, too. One of the things in writing the book and the feedback that I've gotten is that people see that they can use the skills or some of the pieces in the book to apply to all of their relationships. As a matter of fact, two pieces of feedback that I've gotten since the book's come out. One is, it sounds like you wrote this book about me, which is kind of interesting. And the second one is that I can use this and the skills and the pieces of knowledge in the book that I can apply to all my relationships, whether it be a marriage, a relationship to my children, my coworkers, family, everyone involved. Because the basic tenets of how it is that we manage conflict are very, very human. You know, conflict is human. It's human emotion and how we're responding to one another in different situations. So it's so much a part of our daily lives that the better equipped we are to deal with it, the more effective we'll be in our lives and the better relationships we'll have, regardless of where we are in an organization, what the level of leadership is, or what our path in life is.
Can you give us an example of a conflict and maybe the proper way to resolve it or to deal with it or use it to motivate? What would be the way to talk about that?
If I have a relationship, say, to someone that I'm working with, and we're having a hard time getting along and it's getting in the way of getting the work done, what I like to do, what I suggest first doing is taking a look at what you want the relationship to look like, and then be able to invite the other person into the conversation. So my formula for this is I express my intention, and then I begin to ask questions of the other person to invite them into the conversation. So it would be to be able to say to the person, hey, I see that we're not getting along as well as that I'd like to, and I'd like to have a relationship with you that's productive, and then we can get things done in a better way that we're doing them. And so I want to share with you some of my thinking about that, and I want to hear from you what you're thinking about it and to invite them into that. So to ask them at that point, to be able to ask them, so what do you see going on? What kind of relationship would you like to have, et cetera? And so that's that give and take of them getting into that conversation and creating a dialogue becomes so important. Now, I will say that there are times when you invite someone into that conversation and they're still doubtful or they don't want to participate with you, I think coming back around and asking them what they're doubtful about or what they're concerned about becomes very important to keep in mind to be able to do that. And the other piece of it is that there are going to be times where someone else does not want to improve the relationship with you or they're not interested in doing that, at which time getting into a conversation about it at least allows you to discover that and find that out. It's much like a marriage after several years of it not working out for the people involved, that sometimes it's just good to be able to clear the air and find out whether you want to go forward with the relationship or not.
When you are having this kind of discussion, are you already seeing an end goal in mind, or is it still kind of fluid along the way and even the outcome may be uncertain to both of you?
Yeah, I think beginning with the end in mind is important. At least if I would have that kind of a conversation with you or a group of people, I'd at least want to have some idea and be able to communicate to the other person, to the other party, what it is that I'd like to see happen in the end. That's the path to getting there and how we solve the problem. There I would suggest always being very open-minded, because getting information along the way and finding out what other people are thinking and collaborating with them and working cooperatively to understand what that can look like, that's typically where the best outcomes result. You know, we talk a lot, especially in business and in our society, we talk a lot about innovation and how do we get creative. And if you step back, you realize that great problem solving is about putting one idea upon another. And that requires us to both share and to listen and collaborate and build our ideas together. So very often, what I would suggest is you think about the relationship, have some idea of what you'd like the future to look like, and then invite the other person into that conversation with the intention of hearing and listening and understanding what they have to offer. And I think that typically will get you to the best outcome. It's so easy for us as human beings to get rigid around what we want and the way that we want it. It's nice to have an idea of kind of what it looks like and what your end game is and be open to all the possibilities.
What if you're not in the leadership role, but yet you can see this happening? How are you able to be a part of this equation? Or through this, do you then become the leader in such a way?
Yeah, that's an excellent question as well. One of the things that we expect leaders to do is role model, and to be able to role model and reinforce the behavior. Show me a leader that doesn't confront conflict, and I show you the biggest elephant in the room. It's pretty much the way it works. So one of the things that we can do is take the same approach with leaders when they're not confronting conflict. I think to be a great leader, you have to be able to display and show people that you have the capability to collaboratively deal with conflict. Being rigid or always attacking or always avoiding conflict is not going to get you anywhere. So to be a great leader, I think, requires you to be able to work with conflict constructively. And if you are working with a leader that's having difficulty doing that, one way is to step in and role model the behavior yourself. The other one is go have a conversation with that leader. And again, move it to a place around the relationship that you're trying to be helpful, that you're trying to contribute in a way to the environment that's constructive for everyone, and to ask them how they can help you and you can help them in doing that.
No one really likes to deal with conflict. It's just sometimes uncomfortable. Obviously, you're giving us the tools here in this book to do that. But is it best, or what's the way to create an environment so that conflict is minimized, so that the things that trigger conflict or grow it into something beyond that are kind of nipped ahead of time or redirected? What can you do to kind of set a good culture?
What you've actually asked is a question has the answer in it, in a way, and that is to always be out in front of it. When you see a conflict, to address it in a timely manner. What's happening in conflict is somebody's not getting something that they want. And so your ability, and when people aren't getting what they want, and we get fearful, we get angry, we get resentful, there's unspoken expectations not being met. And so the best thing to do is bring it into the conversation, bring it into the relationship in a spoken way as quickly as possible. And nipping it in the bud, the best way to nip a conflict in the bud is to, in a timely way, address it and deal with it as immediately as you can. Now, that doesn't mean you always jump in. What it does mean is that you take a step back, take a look at what's going on, and then figure out what your approach will be. What I am suggesting is you do it in a timely way. Sometimes this idea of deflecting conflict and moving it somewhere else, especially in organizations, actually winds up being a dysfunction of the organization. It's much like when a leader has a poor employee, and rather than confronting it and needing to deal with it and perhaps even asking the employee to leave the organization or telling them they're leaving the organization, very often they pass the problem on. And if you're passing problems on, that's much the same as not confronting a conflict, deflecting it, or trying to avoid it.
It's probably best also to have actions rather than just words with some of these things. You talk about having a discussion, but if people leave something feeling one way and then what proceeds to go on is what was happening before, there's no solving that conflict at that point.
Yeah, that's very true. One of the things, if we walk away from a conversation about a conflict we're having and we don't have action items or we don't have any idea of what the resolution looks like. When you have a conflict resolution, you know that somebody's got to take action or there's a new set of commitments that are being made. And, you know, commitments are like promises. So when you do resolve a conflict, it's so important to be able to, at the end of the conversation, do two things. One is, what are all the parties involved doing? What's their role in the solution? And what are they contributing to it successfully working? The other thing is to test them. In other words, when we make commitments or we set up actions on what we're going to do, come back around and say, does this really solve the problem? And if it doesn't, we've got to keep working at it. So what we do is we test our solutions. We test whether or not they are going to solve the problem. And lastly, the final question I always ask is, am I willing to commit to this? Is this what I really believe and what I'm willing to do? Because if we're not, then what we're doing is kind of setting it up for a whole new set of conflict, or we're walking away with the conflict still intact, still in play, because we're not committed to resolving it.
Wouldn't it be great if it really was an elephant, and then we'd have to spend the time getting it out of there because it would always be in front of us, and it would be something that we would want to take attention to right away. But it's a good metaphor, the way you had to put it here. The Elephant in the Boardroom, How Leaders Use and Manage Conflict to Reach Greater Levels of Success. Edgar Papke, thanks for sharing information. If people want this book or find out more about what you do, where's a good place for them to get it?
Yeah, they can go to the website, which is www.edgarpapke.com, and the other places they can get the book are simply through the major outlets, the Barnes & Nobles, Amazon's, independent booksellers. It's available online everywhere.
Sounds great. Edgar, thank you very much for the time and insight this morning. Appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate being on your program. Thank you so much.
Thanks. I got some elephants around here that I'll have to work on after we get off the air here this morning. Thanks.
We all do.
Excellent. Thanks very much.